Well, I have 3:30, so if everyone's okay with it, we'll go ahead and get started with the Des Moines Water Works Planning Committee meeting scheduled for June 1st. We'll have folks introduce themselves as you speak and get started. I'm Andrea Bolton, board member with Des Moines Water Works. And our first agenda topic is the urban deer management in Waterworks Park.
Yeah, Andrea, if I might, I'll kick this off really quickly here. We are going to have a presentation today on urban deer management. Jessica Barnett is going to be joined by Andy Kellner from DNR. They're going to talk about the Polk County urban bow hunt. And as we consider whether we want to re-engage in the urban deer hunt here in Waterworks Park, we were part of that at one time. We thought it would be of value to have our staff and the DNR share a little bit with the board, because we are getting some questions from park neighbors about our participation there. I think it's safe to say that the DNR would be interested in Waterworks once again participating in the urban bow hunt. And so thought there would be value in kind of walking through that and explaining it. It's been a while since we participated, and we're not making the decision today, but we are here to talk a little bit about it and answer any questions you might have. So with that, I think I'll hand it off to Jessica Barnett, our grounds, well, supervisor of property management, I guess is the title, but responsible for all our grounds, and you can share the presentation with us, Jess.
All right. Can everybody see this okay?
Yes, I can.
Perfect. Well, before I begin, I wanted to point out, Ted has already introduced myself and Andy, but I also wanted to point out we have two members from the Polk County Deer Task Force with us as well, and they will be around at the end of the presentation. Great resource if anybody has any questions. But we have Roger Jackson, who is the chair of the committee, as well as Mike Gull from the city of Des Moines, who is the vice chair. The white-tailed deer is a valuable part of our national heritage. It is one of the most adaptive species in Iowa. And in 1996, the Polk County Deer Task Force was formed, consisting of localized metro communities. They were tasked with studying the impact in conflict, because we were seeing an increase in deer population with the rising in urban development. And here, particularly in Waterworks Park, we're seeing a lot of car deer accidents along our adjacent roadways of George Flake Parkway, as well as Fleur Drive. Also a lot of damage to our landscape, including a lot of tree damage, as well as damage to our beautiful gardens that we have. And that committee of several individuals and communities early on has developed into, and now they have 27 members across the Des Moines Metro and Polk County. And in 1998, we held the first annual urban deer hunt. And Waterworks, we participated from 1998 to 2012, and we currently still are a check-in point for deer harvested for the city of Des Moines. The urban hunt focuses on targeting adult does. And depending on, there is a certain number, but there is a buck tag incentive program. So it's an earned system. So each year, if a hunter harvests so many does, they are put into a pool, and if their name is pulled, they are allowed to harvest a buck the following year. And all hunters have to have several requirements in order to participate. They have to have an Iowa hunting license. They have to go through the bow hunter safety course and receive their certification. They also have to pass an annual proficiency test, as well as follow statewide city and park hunt rules. There have been several benefits when we did offer the urban hunt here in Waterworks Park. We noticed a significant impact on the number of deer that were in the park. We also had a reduction in the car deer accidents and a reduced amount of deer rubbing on our trees, destroying our landscapes, as well as a lot of the meat is donated. And Andy's going to talk a little bit more about that in the next few slides. But with the benefits, there's always a few issues. When the hunt was here, we did have some hunters that didn't follow expectations. And I just wanted to let you know, the Pope County Deer Task Force, they keep a list of the hunters they have issues with, and they monitor that list so those hunters don't try to hunt in other locations and continue to cause problems. We had deer stands left in the park that staff would remove after the hunt was over. We did receive a few complaints from the southern neighborhoods about hunters being very close in proximity to their property. And early on, there was some issues with the check-in procedures. At that time, we had three park officers, and there was just a little bit of logistical conflict because sometimes they would come to check in deer when we didn't have a park officer on staff. And we've since solved that because we have contracted security that does the check-ins for the city of Des Moines. Now I'm going to hand it over to Andy. He's going to talk a little bit more in depth about the deer management process.
Thanks, Jessica. And thanks, Ted, for the introduction. As I said, I'm Andy Kellner, wildlife biologist with the Iowa DNR. I cover all of Southwest Iowa for the depredation program, which includes working with municipalities and deer management zone hunts across that region. And so it's very interesting to have both the rural and the urban aspect and be looking at it from both sides as far as that's concerned. And I think it's always really important to reiterate that this is a public resource. So any decisions made, it's really good to have feed in and acknowledgement from any of the potential users of that resource, whether it's somebody looking at it from wanting to drive through the park and see deer, or if it's a neighbor that's having landscape damage, or if we're looking at the deer themselves and managing for herd health. There's a lot of different avenues to be keeping in mind as we consider what deer management actually means and what it looks like in specific areas. And of course, in an urban landscape, there's some of its own hurdles and some of its own unique challenges that come with that environment. And it's important to recognize too, that looking at Des Moines Metro as a whole, is deer are going to utilize that landscape. Deer are very adaptable, and there's a great set of corridors that run along the river landscape that is habitat that's usable by deer, whether you're looking at it along the Raccoon and coming from the area of Moffett Reservoir or coming down from Sailorville and going out through the southeast side of town. So that's something to consider, that none of this discussion is about eliminating deer altogether. I don't think that's a feasible goal, and I don't think it actually is taking into account what all of our constituents would like to see. Next slide, please, Jessica. So I'm not going to try to dive too far into math, but I do want to provide some things to look at and some things to be aware of when we're talking about deer population and trends. This slide is trends for in general across the state of Iowa. So it might not be specific to a zoomed in area like Waterworks Park itself, but they're relatively true throughout the system of Iowa. So it's really encouraging to me I really encourage you to look at the trends that are visible on this and recognize that in Iowa, outside of hunting, there's very few things that affect a deer at a population level. There's not much for predators. The weather's pretty good. There's abundant food and water resources. So a lot of times we're looking at hunting as the management tool for deer populations in Iowa. That being said, I have a slide at the end for other things to consider as well, because I do think that there's no silver bullet for anything that we're talking about. These trends, again, at a small scale can be impacted by local movements of deer, time of year, activities going on. So it's just view this not as hard set numbers, but take a look at it as the general trends and getting the importance of that. Next slide, please. So keeping that in mind, I think it's important to consider what we do have for numbers. So with the establishment of the Polk County Deer Task Force, the Iowa DNR has collaborated with the cities in the metropolitan area and other entities to do aerial deer surveys. These surveys are conducted from helicopters in the winter of each year. So this would be January through March time period with no leaves on the tree. And the desire is always fresh snowfall. Now, some years the conditions are better than others, but we have a certain set of window parameters that we utilize to try to keep it as consistent as possible. And the areas that we observe across the metro area are consistent from year to year, dating back to the first time these were run in, I believe, 1997 is the earliest I have data for. Keep in mind that this is a set of minimum numbers because it's what we see. If we don't see a deer, then it's not going to be counted in this graph. But also, this is at the end of the hunting seasons in winter. And obviously, when you get up to the time of year that it is now, fawns are being dropped and that population is going to pop back up. So this is to be looked at as minimum set of numbers. And it's just straight deer observations without densities at this point that we're talking about. The reason I included Des Moines Waterworks Park and Yellowbanks is to give you an idea of the trends in the population based on where hunting has continued to occur and where it hasn't occurred. So as Jessica had stated, hunting went through 2012 at Waterworks Park and then it was halted. So you can see the trend upwards from there, whereas at Yellowbanks, we're talking different numbers of deer, but we see a very different trajectory in the direction of those deer numbers as holding constant or even slightly decreasing in the case of Yellowbanks as opposed to increasing in Des Moines Waterworks. Next slide, please, Jessica. Another comparison just to keep in mind is the closest neighbor to Des Moines Waterworks. Anytime I'm working, whether it's rural or urban, it's always important to consider our neighbors and what's going on across the fence line, if you want to call it that. In this case, it's more of the river. So this also includes a set of data from the area that's south of Grand to the Raccoon River, immediately north of Waterworks Park. Now, that area does still have hunting going on, but it's much more limited because of the housing and the rules the city has for safety. I would just add a note that any of the hunting occurring, safety is of the utmost importance. And so that's the first consideration. So it's limited when there's more houses nearby. But if you look at this, again, the emphasis is on that trend. So you see what the numbers do and just see the close ties between those trends at Waterworks Park and the neighboring areas as far as the deer numbers that we're seeing. So that's the takeaway message there. Next slide, please. I always get a little bit hesitant when we try to highlight a specific goal, just because what are we using for the metrics of observation? Each area is different in what it could hold for the deer as far as habitat that's they can be utilized. And what sort of management goals are we shooting for? Are we looking for a reduction in vehicle collisions versus damage to ornamental plants or crop damage? There's always a little bit different to consider there. The Polk County Deer Task Force looked at different information coming in for what the social tolerances were. And they also looked at some of the scientific side of things as far as when are native plants and that community of vegetation being impacted. And what they found is that there's a sweet spot between 30 and 20 deer per square mile to look at. So this, I've switched to deer densities, and this is looking at actual deer per square mile from the aerial observations throughout the history of the observations in the metro area. I highlighted the area right around 20 deer per square mile because based on what your management goals are, I think that's a good number to be looking at and using as an indicator of when numbers might be higher and you might start receiving more complaints from neighbors or may see an increase in vehicle collisions or those sorts of things. And I also have bracketed here the years that hunting was occurring. One of the things to take away from this too is the lag time, the length of time between the ups and downs. The numbers are always going to go up and down. They always do in nature, but the impacts of hunting aren't immediate, just like the impacts of removing hunting aren't immediate. So we see the long-term trends and undulations going up and down with hunting put in there as something that lowers that population and keeps it down. And then what happens when you remove it. So just something to keep in mind and maybe something to shoot for if that's what your management goal is. Again, I don't get too caught up on numbers, but it is something to shoot for. Next slide, please, Jessica. on top of that, like I said earlier, I don't want to put all of the emphasis just on hunting. I think there's a lot of benefits of hunting that can be recognized. I think it's been proven pretty efficiently or effectively in the Des Moines metro area, seeing what it can do, even right there at Waterworks Park with the information we have. There's a proven safety track record. The Polk County Deer Task Force keeps track of all those sorts of things from a year-to-year basis. And so there's a lot of well-established stuff there. One of the big benefits of hunting is the hunters themselves take on the cost and the work and the time that's put into it. And it's highly regulated. So that's a really nice way to do it on your end. All the meat gets utilized. None of this allows for shoot and leave lay. That's never something we would condone. There's the Help Us Stop Hunger program where deer can be donated to families in need through the Food Bank of Iowa. And actually, Urbandale took extra steps this year in providing a refrigerated truck so that more deer could be brought back from that program specifically to the Urbandale Food Pantry. There's also the Iowa Deer Exchange that had a large segment of the its population from that list that was actually Des Moines metro area, where hunters could gift deer to somebody in the city who would utilize the venison. So that was a really successful program. But on top of that, I think it's important to consider the education component. I mean, and that's something where we can work together or working with partners to provide information to neighbors on deer-resistant landscaping or plant choices, things like that that may help people out in areas. Education on removing feeding and that sort of stuff that's going on. There's a lot of that that's really important on the other side of the fence and on your side of the fence. If we're looking at specifically how do we reduce deer vehicle collisions, maybe it's the habitat along the roadways we could look at. Maybe we could look at that more specifically as opposed to hunting being the only thing to really work on and focus on. Ultimately, I think it's also very important to recognize the partners that we have together to do all of these things. The Polk County Deer Task Force has been very instrumental and helpful for any of the hunt coordinators and is a great resource. We have this representative of them here today with the chair, Roger Jackson, the city of Des Moines, and Mike Gall is also present here and have a lot of experience in this realm. But the DNR and Polk County Conservation Board surely would be willing partners too in establishing education or helping inform decisions on the hunt. And I just want you to know that any of the questions that I can answer, I'd be happy to do so. So with that, Jessica, we can go to the final slide, and I'd be happy to take or field with Jessica any questions or comments that you may have.
I have a few questions, but just to start, did I miss why we paused in 2012 the program?
I'll take a swing at that, Jess.
All right.
You know, I honestly think that Bill just was not supportive. Bill Stowe wasn't supportive of urban deer hunting. He didn't think it was the right way to handle the situation, and he didn't want to do it anymore. The numbers were low. I think you could see from the chart that Andy showed there with his kind of 20 deer per square mile target. We were below that. But even when we started moving back above that, there just wasn't support. And so it was a decision that Bill made to end our participation. We did have a few complaints from the neighborhood south of George Flag, as Jessica mentioned, but I think it was more just a philosophical perspective.
And that was one of my next questions is, are the neighborhoods aware that this is a conversation that we're starting to have again? And do we have any feedback or thoughts from them on their opinion on the possibility of opening up Waterworks again?
I've had a limited number of contacts from folks who live north of the park in the south of Grand neighborhood. One resident specifically has talked to me and to the city about the need for us to once again participate, but we have not done any outreach, Andrea, ourselves. Just we've heard from a couple of residents that they would like for us to start allowing it again.
Is that something that we would do, is make the neighborhoods aware of? I mean, because it seems like that neighborhoods would have some concern if they start hearing more, or I guess they wouldn't hear with bow hunting, but if they were made aware of the fact that there was hunting again, that there would be some concerns. Are we planning on trying to get any comments from neighborhood associations, or at least make neighborhood associations aware that we're discussing this and considering this?
We haven't talked about that, Andrea, but I think it's a good point. One of the things that Jessica and I have talked about is if we do this, we're unlikely to allow hunting on our property south of George Flag, which is where all of the complaints came from historically about hunt tree stands being too close to properties and that kind of thing. So we've given some thought to what the neighborhoods might think, but we have not talked about reaching out to neighborhood associations. That might not be a bad idea.
And then I guess if there are other board members that have questions, feel free to interrupt me. But
I had a couple, but go ahead.
I guess just another question. Can you talk to me about this check-in process? So, you know, once all the criteria are met, the education, the license, et cetera, how do we know who's out there and how many people are out there? If I know our numbers are high, but when they do get down lower, how do we make sure we don't have lots of people out there trying to hunt the same 10 deer, for instance?
Jessica or Andy, I'm going to have to let you take that one.
I can talk initially, but I might pass it to Andy or Mike. Who is in charge of the hunt for the city of Des Moines, which we are checking for, but we would designate certain areas here and they can elaborate on the spacing, but you would only allow a certain amount. It wouldn't be whoever wants to come hunt would hunt. It'd be a specified amount depending on the areas that we decide we would allow it. So I'll kind of let one of those guys expand on it from there.
I'll take just a quick stab first, then Mike. Yeah, I think your input would be great here. Every entity does it their own way. So I'd say there's some variety in how the different cities, municipalities, DMZs, and other parts of the state do it. But it's up to the entity and how they want to control the flow of hunters, how many applicants they want to allow. For instance, Urbandale, they have certain city parks that are open to hunting. And they base it kind of on acre sizes, and then they determine, okay, is this safe for one hunter, two hunters, three hunters? And that's what they limit it to. So it'd be completely up to Waterworks on where you want to designate the places that would be allowable for hunting and how you'd want to manage those hunters. But Mike might have some better insights into the specifics on how the city of Des Moines at least does it.
Yeah, sure. I can take a stab at it. So Mike Gall, horticulture inspector for the city of Des Moines Parks and Rec. I've been coordinating our efforts about 15 years. The urban deer hunt. Just to make sure I understand the question. So the check-in portion that Waterworks does help us, that's physically checking in deer after it's harvested. So I think the question is leading more towards the permit process and how many hunters are out there. That's 100% up to the entity. So like we have certain parks where we've approved up to four hunters that can be in that location, and it's by drawing and only those four hunters can be in there, if that makes sense.
Okay. And we're talking about September through January hunting season. I'm not up on
that's how the Polk County urban hunt has been from essentially the start of the youth season, which is in mid-September through the end of January. But again, within those parameters, it's opened up a little bit wider. Each entity inside of that zone is allowed to make the rules the way they want. If you want to limit that to a different window. One of the nice things about earlier in the season is you're targeting more local deer before they've been moved around by the change in weather and hunting in other parts of the state and the city. But it's certainly up to Des Moines Waterworks and what they would allow for their window of opportunity.
Thanks. Joel, sorry, I'll pass it over to you.
Oh, that was perfect, because that answered a lot of my questions, or at least told me that we don't yet have answers. You know, a lot is yet to be determined. My questions were about the scope and effect of the hunt, the size and scope, I suppose, and what would be needed to actually make a dent in the deer population. Because I my suspicion is that just having a couple hunters out there wouldn't make such a dent in the deer population that would be really worthwhile in terms of our goals of, you know, if the goal is to thin the herd to such an extent that we reduce vehicle collisions and damage to the park and whatnot, it might not be worth all the effort and, you know, potential pushback if we only have a few hunters out there. So, you know, how many hunters do we think we need to have? How long does the program, does the hunt need to be open? And how many deer do we need to harvest to make a realistic dent in the population to have the desired effect?
That's a great question. So again, going back to those aerial surveys, that's one thing you can use, but again, that's a minimum count of deer for the year. And actually, if you could go up one more, Jessica, we have information from 2021, but I hate leaving one set of data that's by itself. It wouldn't have another year with it because 2020, there was no surveys run due to the conditions. That being said, I think this at least gives us a starting point of what we're looking at as far as the percentage of what you might want to go for. Waterworks, you're looking at a 3.5 square mile area or so. So I think you could be looking at what's actually safe places to hunt within that for how many hunters to be allowing. And then within the frame of the hunt, one particular hunter, I mean, they could keep going back and purchase as many antlerless licenses as they'd want out of the pool that's available for the DMZ, which is a large pool of tags. So what's nice about that is if you choose to participate in the incentive program, then you're looking at four deer that a hunter would harvest, four does that they would harvest in order to qualify for an incentive license. So that's something on their end to gauge what level we're looking for. And that goes back to some of the statistics that have been modeled out as far as how many does should we be looking at removing from the system to either flatten or show a downward trajectory, given on a ratio aspect of four does per buck. That gives you a way of thinking. I know it's not a hard set number per hunter, but between that and the aerial surveys, I think we could start to tease out, you know, what would be some good benchmarks or goals to be looking at to keep in mind. And I think it's also something that we need to be open and have discussion about through the years. Let's say you hunt for a couple of years and the deer population does go down. It might be time to kind of reexamine, okay, how many hunters are we allowing out here? Again, with the mindset of, do we want to ever remove it completely? Do we want to keep it at a lower level, or what's the management want to consider at that time? So that was kind of a political response to your question, and I apologize for that, but there are a lot of moving pieces to be looking at there. And some of it's going to be self-regulated by the hunters themselves too, with what opportunities there are to harvest an animal.
A lot of those questions, am I right in understanding that those would be waterworks to answer? Where people are hunting, how many deer we're allowing to be harvested, how many hunters? Is that right? Yep. That would be waterworks decision.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And then I would just throw in there that myself or the rest of the Polk County Deer Task Force would certainly be available for helping answer any of those questions when somebody's unsure about it. But yep, that would be up to Waterworks to determine and look at that. Noting also that they are within city limits of Des Moines. So I think it would be great to get feedback from Mike and the experiences he's had to make sure we don't have any kind of bouncing around the rules of what's been established in other areas there.
I suspect we would want to do that as well. Ted, I mean, it sounds like we're early in this process, so we don't have a strong idea yet of all those details I was asking about. We're just kind of taking a look at this preliminarily now.
That's right, Joel. We wanted to bring it to the board and make sure there was openness to process before we got into a lot of detail. I mean, we know that we want to shrink the area a little bit compared to what we had the last time, because we did have some complaints from the homeowners to the south of George Flag. Other than that, you know, we'll be looking at the area. We'll be, you know, picking the number. We'll be doing all of those things once we decide that this is something that we want to do.
Sure.
And if there's openness to the concept, I think what we would want to do is go back and Jessica can work with Andy and Mike, and we can come up with a proposal of how we would see implementing the program this year. And that there is we brought this in June because we thought that would give us time to get a proposal together for yet this year. If there's openness, we can get a proposal together and bring that back.
Sure. Well, I'll say to kind of reiterate my point earlier or questions earlier, I'm open to this. It makes some sense. And I think Andrea raised a really good point about getting feedback from the neighborhood associations. And certainly it doesn't need to start as a massive thing the first year. We can, work our way up. But I wouldn't want to see us move forward. Not that anyone's given this impression, but I hope we're not doing this just because a couple hunters really want to get back in the park and really like the program. I would want the goal to really be the population management and not just, we know a few people are really, really enjoyed hunting there and we want to let them get back in. I think it should be a more holistic goal here that we should be striving for.
Understood. Go ahead, Diane.
So I have a couple of questions. One is, I do think we need to go to the neighborhood association, but it may be that people will support it. I know gardeners are constantly fighting with deer on eating everything. So it may be more of a positive response in talking about managing the population rather than just assuming that it would be negative. The other question is, I'm somebody who is on that bike trail through Waterworks all the time. How does this impact the bike trail? And I wanted to ask, the bike trail is going to be closed for a couple months. Is that correct? I would really hate to get hit by an arrow when I was riding my bike through there.
Yeah, I'll spin off that. I understand the need for deer population control. One of my concerns, kind of spinning off of what Diane was saying, is that we're, undergoing this master plan with the Park Foundation to encourage more people to be in the park and in all areas of the park. And I would be curious, before really making any decision on this, kind of knowing exactly what areas. If we have 3.5 square miles as a facility as a whole, what are we really talking about once we carve out those high populate or high traffic areas for bike trail, especially in September? September, October, people are still out there. What are we really talking about, where and how many and all of that? But I'll defer now to Diane's questions that I interrupted the answers for.
Yeah, Andy, can you give us any perspective on, the safety incidents that have occurred as a result of the urban deer hunting, or, just kind of complaints overall in the whole scheme of things? Because you're hunting in areas all over Polk County.
Sure. Yeah. And Mike could certainly chip in here too, if you like. But typically a city or entity has specific rules for how far from an established trail a stand can be set up. I know there's conversations even at a smaller scale with individual hunters too, giving advice and making sure the hunter's aware to, shoot this direction, not this direction. Let's do it in a safe way. Everything's from an elevated stand, so it's at a downward trajectory. Many cities have specific distances set that the hunter needs to shoot within. So they're not taking a 40-yard shot. Most of the time it's 20 or 25 yards. Again, that comes down to each entity. Those things really help to increase the safety. Not only is bow hunting tend to be extremely safe by itself, but then with the increased regulations for these specific DMZs in urban areas, I have not heard in any of the DMZs across the state of an incident where anybody's been injured. Bow hunting is something where it's quiet and very close quarters, intimate in nature, where it's very obvious that that's a deer. It's right there. 20 yards is not far at all. So it's not something where somebody accidentally gets mistaken for a deer or anything like that. But again, having the set distances for how close a stand could be from given high use areas like a trail, they do two things. One, it increases the safety, but two, it also keeps bow hunters in a little more secluded of an area so they're out of sight. Any of these hunters you talk to, I mean, maybe there's a few divas out there, but typically they don't want to be seen or heard or make a scene, because that's just an uncomfortable situation. So this is something that goes on quietly in the back of the scenes and as a management tool, as opposed to right in the face of any potential park users. That being said, we did have, I feel like, a slight increase last year just from some concerned comments about, hey, I didn't even know hunting was occurring here. I think that was largely can be attributed to COVID and more people spending time outside and recreating in areas where they typically weren't in the fall. So Andrea, I think that's a great point, that with an emphasis to get more people out to some of these areas, it might, if this is the step that the Waterworks would like to take, it might not hurt to say, okay, well, these are areas where this is also a recreation activity going on. I'd point out that public areas across the state are multi-use, and whether it's a bow hunter out there or somebody walking a dog, there's these things that are going on at the same time, and it's not something that we tend to really get a lot of negative feedback on outside of an occasional comment or concern.
I have two more questions, and one is maybe a comment, not a question. In addition to the neighborhood association, I think what Andrea said made me think that maybe we should go to the foundation also and have a discussion with them, since they put so much time into looking at recreational activities in the park. And a question you can answer is there any age limit on these hunting licenses with a bow?
So that's a good question. That one doesn't come up too often. And Mike, maybe from a city perspective, but under a certain age, they would require a parent or guardian to be with them. So anybody under that age wouldn't be allowed. It's easy to have a rule that says nobody under 18 or something like that, just to make sure you have a more mature hunter. But Mike, what do you guys do?
Yeah, the city of Des Moines is 18 years and older.
Thanks.
And just to be clear, there's also a proficiency requirement. I mean, you have to go and test and make sure that you are capable in terms of using a bow, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Again, I cover enough cities that sometimes I confuse the different entities. Is it 5 shots at 20 yards, Mike, that they have to get for Des Moines?
Yeah, they have 80% out of 10 arrows at 15 and 20 yards.
Diane, this is Graham. I'm sorry for the background noise. The Neighborhood Association, that my first involvement was with this was when the Neighborhood Association called me to ask us to look into allowing deer hunting on Des Moines Waterworks property. So that process has begun, and then we'll continue to follow up with them as well.
Thanks, Graham. And I also wanted to point out that we have talked to the Park Foundation. We met with Sam and Amy Jennings, who's the current president, and just let them know that these conversations were going on. And you know, they had similar questions to what you've asked about safety and areas to be included and those kind of things. But beyond that, they didn't express significant concerns.
Diane, I can give you a quick update on the bike trail. The closure is through, they're hoping to have it open by July 4th, but they're working on the underpass underneath the railroad tracks where it meets Walnut Creek. There's been a lot of erosion there over the years, and so that is why it is closed, and it will be for about a month.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
This was kind of alluded to, but I'll just flag another user group who I think will maybe be concerned with this. You know, you see a lot of people walking their dogs, especially off leash out in, which I don't recall if that's allowed or not, but you see it, a lot of off leash dogs, especially in kind of the less populated outlying areas of the park and the woods and whatnot. And I think, you know, those folks would certainly be concerned about a dog. I agree with the comments that a bow hunter is not going to mistake a person or probably even a dog for a deer, because it's such a intimate, you know, deal. But I think those people will be concerned, so maybe a group to consider.
and maybe even the equestrians. We've got a couple stables to the north.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, we'll do some outreach to those groups. This is really great discussion. Other questions for Jessica or Andy or Mike or other comments? I think what I'd like to propose at this point is that we take this back and we give some consideration, and maybe we look at it a little bit more detail, the area that we might consider, do a little bit of outreach, and then we can bring something back to the board for its consideration. Maybe not this month, probably not, in fact, but maybe in July we could bring something back to the board for consideration.
I think that sounds good, Ted.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you to all of our guests for your time and attention.
Yes, thank you very much for having me. I'll be available throughout the process for questions and comments. So yeah, Jessica, I'll look forward to working with you on this.
Thank you all. We appreciate your time and the education on this topic as well. With that, we'll move to the next agenda item, the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant expansion. And I assume, Ted, you're going to kick things off on this topic as well.
Yeah, just really briefly, Andrea, I'll introduce Mike McKernan and who you all know, and Wally Bergen, who's a new supervisor in our engineering department. They're going to share with us a little bit of a discussion about our RFP that we issued late last week related to expansion of the Sailorville Water Treatment Plant, kind of what we're thinking there. I'm trying to move down the path of being prepared for the growing demand here.
It's like a big muscle car.
Mike, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, let's see if I got the first part done correctly here. Is the share coming across properly or did?
It is. I can see it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll launch here. A little team effort today, myself and Wally Bergen. Ted, thank you for the introductions of both of us. We're going to talk about Sailorville Water Treatment Plant expansions and in more detail, preliminary engineering for a couple different expansions and then corresponding cost estimates. And I want to, you know, get to a higher altitude here to start the conversation here today. You've heard us talk about the 2017 long-range plan that was completed here 4 years ago. That document is something that fuels our five-year CIP. It also fuels our annual budgeting. The board has probably seen this image that I stuff into about every PowerPoint involving larger planning that's going on here at Des Moines Water Works. In the first quarter of 2021, as a reminder, we hired HDR to come back and do a update and progress report on that long range plan. I think we shared that in March. And certainly, I'm not as closely related to this third bullet, but you know, the ongoing discussions amongst board members, Ted and Amy, with the region in regard to regionalization discussions. You put all these things together and it becomes pretty clear that it might be time to talk about, get a little more serious about this preliminary engineering. But a couple more background things on the 2017 long range plan and just some information that's pertinent to Des Moines Water Works. Our existing treatment capacity is defined here. Fluor at 75 million gallons per day. McMullen at 25 and Sailorville at 10. That long-range plan had a number of alternatives. The one that we have been embracing really since the beginning has been this alternate 2A, and it communicated that there should be some planned expansions for the utility, and it talked about, and in this order, by the way, doing a 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville, expanding that membrane plant, then traveling out west and doing a 12.5 million gallon expansion at the McMullen plant, and then topping all that off with a 25 million gallon expansion at Sailorville, again with conventional treatment. That's what was in this alternate 2A. We're not tied to that in any way, but those are certainly guideposts that should help us move forward. The progress report that was done in quarter one, we had an opportunity. We had 5 more years of operational data. We had this event in 2020 that I want to underscore. And, you know, 2020 was the largest volume of water sales for Des Moines Water Works in its history. That's kind of an important data point. We had our highest average day, but at the same time, we did not have, we didn't set any peak records. So in many ways, kind of a really strong year, you know, large sales and some limit on the peak. We also learned that there's some new water demands coming to the metro that, you know, we didn't know about or didn't project in 2017. So we kind of want to roll that into the equation as well. And, you know, the real question of HDR with this update and progress report was, hey, there's a number of key projects identified in the long range plan. And the largest key projects are these plant expansions. Can the plant expansions be, does any data support that, you know, these key projects could be delayed or pushed out in time? And the message from the update and progress report was pretty clear. Given that average day data that we just saw or we've seen over the last 5 years, things are, average day data is tracking very well with the projections that were in that 2017 report. Now, while we haven't seen the peaks yet, the average day data is tracking with the projections in the original report. For that reason, trying to support an argument that would say we could delay these projects is just, the data does not support that. And so the key comment that came out of this update and progress report was pretty simple. The projects cannot be delayed. And again, with some of the additional data, there's comments in there that we should consider the sequence and order of those expansions. And that'll be very important here as we've brought ourselves to a point, a little fork in the road here. We're very confident there's 2 questions we really want answered. We want to know what a 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville would look like. We would like someone to maybe present 2 or 3 ideas on how we might accomplish a 10 MGD expansion. What are the pros and cons? What are the life cycle costs? And then we would pick one of those, and then we will allow this preliminary engineering to occur where we really, again, we do like a 10 or 15% design where we find out schematically and conceptually what does a 10 MGD expansion at Sailorville look like for the option that we think is in the best interest. And we would complete that preliminary engineering, and with that would come this cost estimate to construct the improvement. So that's kind of the first big question is what does a 10 MGD expansion look like? We would do the exact same thing with a 25 million gallon per day expansion. What are the options? What are the opportunities? What are the pros and cons? What are the life cycle costs? Allow staff to select one of those and then have a consultant, again, perform preliminary engineering, develop 10% drawings, and develop a corresponding construction cost estimate for the improvement. If we, as a utility, have the answers to those very broad questions, and we are able to put those in the hands of CEO and general manager on the board as regionalization discussions continue throughout the latter half of 2021, we really think at year end we're in a good spot. If we have the answers to those questions at year end, we're in a spot where we can make decisions that are in the best interest ultimately of Des Moines Water Works and hopefully the metropolitan region. So I'm going to hand the baton now to Wally Bergen. Ted did a little introduction earlier, but Wally's going to be project managing this effort going forward. He's going to talk to you about the process that we have kind of laid out here to get the RFP out and get responses. So Wally, please take it away.
Yeah, thank you, Mike. So request for proposals. This is something that Mike and I have been working on the last couple of weeks. And Mike's mentioned a couple of these things in here already, but you know, what we're asking for is preliminary engineering for a 10 MGD expansion of the Sailorville plant. And then also that preliminary engineering for 25 MGD of the plant up there as well. To get that, we're thinking somewhere around that 10% design level, somewhere in that neighborhood, layout of schematics, concept drawings, site layouts, whatever construction roll-up costs we can get in place to put together a package then for everything that's end-to-end. So the source water at the well sites along the Des Moines River, the treatment process itself, and then the ability to transmit that finished water to our customers so that are in demand for the product here. So really, you know, it's going to be enough to get the answer to the question, you know, what's it going to take for to do this? What's going to be the cost and the technical options that we need to consider to get us there? So part of that creativity that we're asking from proposers and consultants on this technical evaluation, what's currently running at Sayville Water Plant, you know, incorporate the improvements and learn what we've learned over the last several years to get that site to full 10 MGD plus, take those learnings and move them forward into that next 10 MGD expansion for that first option. And then also we would do something similar to that as well for the 25 MGD option. So what would be the best technology to use, for example? Would it be to stay with membranes? Would it be to take a look at lime softening? All those questions we're asking our consultants to take a look at, and we're asking them for a minimum of three different options from a technical standpoint. You know, to put together this this proposal so that we could then evaluate this to get the answer that we're trying to seek by the end of the year, the first of next year, like Mike had mentioned there earlier. So on this slide here, we're taking a look at some local, regional, national, international firms and so on. We are getting quite a bit of interest in this, obviously, because of the size of the project and the importance it has here in central Iowa. Some of the ones I have listed off to the right, we sent this out on Friday the 28th. So these companies here got it, and a few more that are not listed, mainly Howard R. Green and AECOM would be on this list as well. So, yeah, as of last Friday, we have this sent out to these firms. And then also we publicized this on the web and in the paper per our normal procedures for just general public knowledge and others that might want to put in a proposal for this as well. So we're making sure to follow that process. So here's a time frame. So you can see the 28th, that's passed. That's gone out last week to those consultants. I sent that out. The next milestone, which is 5 weeks away, that we're giving them some time to develop this. So that'd be July 2nd. And then hopefully we'll start hearing back from our consultants then. And those proposals should be put together by that time. We've carved out the week of the 12th in July for interviews if we think we need to do that, or, you know, how many interviews of different companies is yet to be determined, but we have that week carved out for that. And then we're targeting the 27th of July for the board approval so that we can then hit the ground running in August with the selected partner to start getting all these preliminary designs and cost estimates put together to meet that time frame that Mike outlined before. So, and that's about it.
Thank you, Mike and Wally. I think, as Mike described, it was very clear from the LRP update that we did need to move down the path of capacity expansion. What this fairly unique RFP that Mike and Wally have put together will do for us is give us flexibility as we work through our regional discussions, help us understand the cost of both of the options that we have before us, those being 10 MGD expansion and 25 MGD expansion. So sort of regardless of where the regionalization discussions land, we'll be prepared and we'll be ready to move forward. So are there questions for Mike or Wally about the RFP?
Not so much the RFP specifically, but did I understand correctly from one of Mike's first slides that we're talking with the LRP about doubling the size of it was back a little bit further, but doubling the size of McMillan. There we go. Doubling the size of Sailor. Well, let's see if I'm reading that right. Sailorville and
The two options we're looking at, Andrew. One of them would double the size, okay. And the other would, you know, more than triple it. So. You know, if we just did a 10 MGD expansion, that would be, you know, now the plant would grow to 20.
Sure.
And if we did 25, it would grow from 10 to 35, if I use the right numbers there. If we expanded by 25, then we would put 25 on top of the 10 and have a 35 MGD production facility there.
Okay. That's, I mean, and I'm sure I've seen this before, just remembering how significant of a project we're talking about here.
These, you know, the 25 MGD expansion is certainly going to be far more obvious to the passerby. It's going to be an additional facility on the site. The 10 MGD expansion is probably also going to be noticeable to the people on this call, but the public may not see it as much of it can be or could be integrated into the existing, you know, footprint of the building. There would be more well sites, but people don't usually see those. And once you bury some transmission pipe, people just enjoy the benefits of that. They don't see it.
I have a quick question, and that is, I'm recalling some of the long-term plan. I thought that there were some ASRs in there. How does that fit into this, or does it now?
Well, this RFP is specifically targeted to the plan expansions, Diane. But within our five-year CIP, we included an ASR addition. So as we get closer to budgeting season and vetting that, our pursuit of an ASR would be independent of this, but it's part of broader discussions about determining what level of treatment capacity we want. And you're right, there's a couple different tools to get us there.
Do we have any other questions or comments about the RFP process? Well, I appreciate the update on this. I can only imagine that it's been quite the process to put this proposal or this request for proposal together. And we'll be definitely interested and curious to see how the outcome of those different tiers of information will turn out.
Very good. You'll likely hear from us in July. And then if that's successful, then there'll be a lot of work here in the last half of the year. So thank you today.
Yeah. Thank you all. Ted, do you want to share any additional thoughts or comments, or should we turn things over to the planning, or not the planning committee, but the community relations committee?
Yeah, Andrea, I think I'll reserve my comments and we can move along.
Okay. Well, with that, are there any public comments for us in the planning committee today? Not.
I didn't see anyone from the public.
Okay, I'm not seeing anyone. No hands raised. So with that, I will turn it over to the customer relations committee.